The fourth quarter of the program is underway here on a Friday. I hope you have a very good weekend planned. I do, because I'm going to go to Omaha. Going to watch the College World Series for the first time in my life. I'm very excited for that. You can hear those games right here on Sports Radio 810, 6 o'clock tomorrow night, 2 o'clock Sunday.
Six and two.
Yeah,
six and two. I was going to ask you when they are. You just told me.
6-2. Tonight coming up, we've got game 5 of the Stanley Cup playoffs. Wild game in Tampa last time out. And this is do or die for Tampa, man. If Colorado wins it tonight, it's over. One at a time, you're going to come back from 3-1 down. You got to win the first one first.
As they go for a three-peat, first would be the first team to win back to win three straight since the Islanders won four straight from 80 to 83. I've never seen, I mean, I haven't watched as much hockey probably as a lot of people, but a game end the way it ended the other night with no one knowing where the puck was.
It was stuck
for
in the
30
net.
Seconds. What?
Where is this? Where is this?
And
then finally, the abs all like, well, yeah, it's in there. And the other guy's like, It was really weird. The guy who lights the lamp didn't know. The dude who blasts the horn didn't know. Mm-hmm. They're like, where's this thing? It was wild.
Celebrating.
And the hockey is great to watch, and they do a super job on the radio. It sounds great. You know, it's fun.
I want everyone to listen tonight. But if you're not watching, not choose to watch on TV, got just another example of why I think Sean McDonough is the most underrated play-by-play announcer of my lifetime.
Yeah, he does everything.
He does all four major sports, and he's great at all four. He's a great football. I mean, did the Monday night games. He was a national baseball announcer in the early days of CBS. His basketball calls are fantastic, and he's got a perfect. It's hard to be really good at all four of those sports. He's just amazing.
Yeah,
he never gets the recognition I think that has earned.
Yeah, it's really good. So we'll have the game tonight on the air, and like I said, we got Sporting tomorrow at 2. They're out in Seattle, and they came off their big win against the Omaha Union. And now the draw came out yesterday. It's a road game. They got to go to Sacramento for the next leg of the U.S. Open Cup. But that's fine. They'll get the final at home if they win.
Yeah,
that'll be cool.
Yeah.
And then they have regular action this week out in Seattle, and hopefully they've got some good things going. They won at Nashville last week, and then they won their U.S. Open Cup game. So let's keep a little momentum going for them. That'll be good. The Royals in action tonight against the Oakland A's. Salvador Perez has been placed on the injured list. He's going to have thumb surgery, so he's going to be out for a bit. That's pretty bad. Tough deal there. We've got the Children's Mercy deal coming down with the Big Slick tournament. That's going to be very cool for those guys in town. And we'll hear a little bit later this hour from Rob Riggle and Eric Stone Street about being here, what Kansas City means to them, because they do a great job with that.
Just in case, because I wasn't sure, just in case the other day I looked up the Sacramento Republic, they play, or FC, whatever they're called, I think the Sacramento Republic, they play in a stadium that also has a semi-pro rugby team, and it's about 11,000 people, so a little over half the capacity of Sporting, it'll be...
But
I don't know.
That's pretty. That I think they have a decent following for a minor.
Yeah, for a minor
league
soccer club. I mean, they're doing well. I think they'll show out.
Oh,
and you know they're jacked.
This is the
after
biggest game
the
they've
Galaxy.
Ever had.
Yeah,
this they're a home game against an MLS team. That'll be something when that one comes up. But hopefully, Sporting will win that and they'll have a chance to win a trophy when they come back in. So those are the things that are kind of happening now. The Chiefs, nothing going on right now. Last week, about this time, is when they announced their training camp dates. They put those out there. If you're looking to make your plans to go up
July
to St. Joseph.
I think, goes to the latest I can remember training camp going. I think it's August 19th or
something
along
that line.
Yeah,
they play a game and come back and do basically a week up there. It's pretty late. I don't know. I mean, there's a reason they're doing it then, but I think they might want to get a little kiss to St. Joe because they didn't go up there at all 2 years ago.
Yeah.
Keep it going, you know? Keep it going.
Give an extra week.
Get it up there. I'm not super excited about it. I'd like to drive to practice out at the Arrowhead practice facility. We'll be burning the tires going up and down there. But so that's what's going on there. On that side, we I know earlier this week, Surin had Chris Kleiman on. We talked about this a little bit yesterday with the recruiting news. They picked up a big recruit yesterday. We've talked about everybody who's been on the last week or so about this Arch Manning news in Texas, and you keep seeing it up there. So those are the kind of things that are happening there. But the thing that most of the people around here were watching last night was the NBA draft. And we had a couple of local kids. You know, you just asked a question, you know, when we're going to...
First time since 85 that two KC area kids went in the first round.
And that's pretty cool. It's pretty cool, and I like the fact that they weren't just KC area kids or KC area kids who went to school here. and went to college here.
And if you're a Kansas fan.
And had success here, yeah, all of it.
And if you're a Kansas fan, it feels like for the first time in a while that someone who was a Jayhawk went. I mean, Andrew Wiggins went to Kansas, but Andrew Wiggins isn't a Jayhawk.
Not like these
Joel
guys.
Joel Embiid isn't a Jayhawk. Ochai Agbaji and Christian Brown are Kansas Jayhawks, man. And that's they left a lasting imprint on that program, not just winning the title, but for being there as long as they were. So if I was a Kansas fan, I think I'd be even more proud of what happened last night than when Wiggins went number one, because Kansas was just a stop along the way. It was a convenience store that you had to go through to get to where you wanted to go. That wasn't the case with these two guys.
Yeah. To speak to that point, the last one I can remember is Thomas Robinson. And similar mm-hmm. thing, they obviously came up short in the title game, but had an incredible, you know, a season that going into the tournament, a lot of people probably didn't expect that team to get as far as they got. And a team that was led by, as Curtis put it very well, a true Jayhawk. Robinson, we knew his story.
Mm-hmm. Been there for years.
3 years.
Yeah.
And so that was kind of it. And that's 10 years ago.
Yeah, absolutely 10 years. So this is a cool story. So last night they got Coach Self on a Zoom for us afterwards. We got a chance to ask some questions about his guys. And we talked about this earlier. Are they done growing, or can they be more? He disagrees with the notion that just because they've been around for a while that they don't have any room to grow as players.
Well, both of them are this way. You know, people say Ochai, since he's 22, you know, and CB's 21, that they're closer to the ceiling. That's a bunch of crap. They can both get better. They were both late bloomers. I think that Ochai, his intangibles have improved so much from a competitiveness, even though he always was, but he's learned that there's a different gear he got to get to compete at the highest level. And when you work as hard as he does in that fifth gear, every single possession, every single drill, every single shot, you're going to get better. So he's a good shooter now, great shooter. He's going to become exceptional. And CB, when he tightens his stroke up just a little bit, you're going to see a huge jump with him, because right now he's a terrific player, and he's going to get more and more consistent from the arc.
There's nothing for these guys to do now except work. And, you know, they worked really hard on their games. But when you're in college, there's a few more distractions, right? I mean, you have to take care of some schoolwork and do some things. And now this is your livelihood. And these guys are workers and grinders, and I expect that they will be shooting and working on ball handling drills and all that stuff post haste.
They're used to
right
it.
Now.
They weren't just physically gifted guys who, I can just play ball. I'm just going to keep doing that.
Yeah.
If there's any room to grow, those two guys will find it.
Let's hear from Ochai Agbaji today. He was already up in Cleveland where he got drafted, and here's him talking about whether or not he thinks he's a finished product or he's got a little upside.
That's just more motivation to get better. I think, you know, as my progression, my years have gone by, I feel like I'm only getting better. And, you know, with that, like I said, that last summer, what I learned, applying that to my career moving forward is just even more motivating to me.
I think he's going to work hard and grind. I remember, gosh, right when, you know, Danny was talking about going up there for his signing up at Oak Park when he signed and committed and, you know, became a Jayhawk. And I remember when Jarrett Sutton, who also went to Oak Park, been on many times, way back then even, he's like, well, this is the guy who the NBA people like what he's about. This was when they pulled the red shirt off of him and he played. So this is years ago now.
Yeah.
And Jarrett knows what the NBA is about. He scouts. That's what he does. He's like, this is the body, the athleticism,
you got it right.
The work ethic and all that stuff. And he would have gotten drafted last year. Mm-hmm. I don't think there's any question about that. But he wouldn't have got drafted in the lottery, and he wouldn't have cut the nets down. So he made the absolute right decision by coming back. And I don't think you can argue really that Christian Brown made a bad decision. Now, maybe if he came back, he could get drafted a little bit higher. But if you're getting drafted 21 and you just got to leave on the high note, this is the thing to do. This is the way you go about doing it. Because what you don't want to do, because you look down the list of seniors who got picked, and not a lot of them. You know, you want to make the risk to be that one guy. And this has been a weird couple of years of the draft because of the COVID and people coming back and going out and all that stuff. It's trying to figure out exactly where people are going to go is be a little bit hard for some of these guys. But I think these guys made the right choice last year and this year.
Yeah.
And wish them nothing but the best. Should be a lot of fun for them.
Yep.
All right, a couple other things going on around the world of sports that you absolutely need to know. Aaron Judge, not Aaron Swartz, although he would have agreed to this. I don't think he would have even gotten this far. Aaron Swartz would have agreed to the $17 million.
Can I just say how great it is that's something Serena would normally do, get half the name right and half the name wrong, and have the name you say be the name of somebody else, that you're in for him, and you did the
I did it.
Is
it perfect? I was talking to Dan Schwartzman about Aaron Judge, and it came out that Aaron Swartz got a $19 million arbitration deal.
I'm sure Aaron would be fine with.
He would take. I think he would have taken the 17 that was the initial offer. He probably wouldn't even have held out. But $19 million, and these arbitration things, this normally happens in January and February. Mm-hmm. But because of the lockout, they're happening in the middle of the year, which is weird. And right. I don't think you'd want to go to arbitration, actually have the hearings and all that. So they've avoided that. The hearing was going to be scheduled today, $19 million for Judge. Dan Schwartzman told us this number is going to be huge. And it's not going to be just a foregone conclusion that he's going to sign with the Yankees, because he will have suitors everywhere. The number is going to be a monster when it comes time for him to be the unrestricted free agent. We were talking to Passan about this yesterday, about Ohtani. You know, he's got one more year, and then he'll be a free agent. There's some big, big numbers that are going to be running around out there. Also in the Major League Baseball, Blue Jays hitting coach Guillermo Martinez was suspended for 5 games and fined an undisclosed amount of money for making contact with an umpire during an exchange of a lineup card, which is an odd time to get after somebody, you know?
I saw that video like, dude, really?
Here's the lineup card and a knuckle sandwich for you, Blue.
What do you think about that? You want this? Maybe you don't send the hitting coach out with a lineup card anymore.
It's a little aggressive.
Yeah.
A little aggressive for pregame.
It's one of the things that people don't ever really watch. It's one of the ceremonial aspects of baseball. Do you need to go out there and hand someone a piece of paper?
Yeah.
They don't need to do that.
Stop.
You could Venmo. Text.
You could do whatever you need to do. Yeah, I agree.
You really
Dropbox.
Could. Dropbox it. Can you put it on the cloud for me?
Yes.
But they still do it. The umpires all come stand there, and you send somebody out. It's not always a manager. It rarely is.
Almost never.
It's, you know, hey, go take the lineup card. It's a photo op, basically. Mm-hmm. You know, or like they had the deal, Dusty Baker and his kid, they were playing against each other, and so he took the lineup card out. It's a nice little thing. And this guy goes out there, and he starts trouble.
The only time I remember that ever, like the lineup card moment being a big story, was after Jim Joyce blew the call on Armando Galarraga's what would have been either a no-no
game.
Or a perfect game. Yeah.
Perfect game.
And the owner of the Tigers gave Galarraga a brand-new Corvette, and they had a big – it's okay, I still love you ceremony with the lineup card.
They didn't fight, though.
No, they didn't fight.
Well, this wasn't a fight, but it was making contact. I guess he must have slipped and fallen. You know, all the controversy last year with the handshake lines? They just do away with handshake lines. This may be something we don't need to do. I don't know. They could actually start the game faster if they didn't go through all this stuff. But baseball does what baseball does. They have a rule out now that everyone needs to rub the mud on the baseballs this exact same way. Everything's always very ceremonial with baseball. I'm not sure if I've ever heard this person's name in my life, but Steve Clifford has agreed to return as the head coach of the Charlotte Hornets. Okay? Weren't going to have him, and then someone else was going to take the job. They took it back. They didn't want it, and now this guy. So he's already been there.
Didn't Steve Clifford sound like he might have been a dad on an 80s sitcom?
Oh, yeah. I was going to say, wasn't Steve Clifford like a regular on Cheers?
So he was there before and got fired like 4 years ago.
Yeah.
And now he's back.
So the Hornets are in such a great spot that their new coach is a guy that they canned before, and they weren't able to hire him till after the draft. So things are going well.
Well, they had someone
Charlotte.
They Trump. Thought they hired and said no, right? Does nobody want to work for Michael? Is that the deal?
It could be.
I mean, seriously.
And I took that personally.
And he hasn't been able to fix anything that he takes personally because they're not.
Some guys can just play.
Yeah, and that's
and
what
that's
they
all
do.
They can do.
That's what
and
they can do.
Some guys the ones who can just play, some of them understand that at different points in their career.
Yeah.
Some guys keep trying because they keep giving them opportunity. Some guys go, you know what, this is what I do, and they stop.
On that same front, Wayne Rooney, who was a great soccer player for Man U, has told Derby County that he wishes to leave his role as manager with immediate effect. Okay, so they were relegated from the championship down to the third tier. So here's a guy who can't even keep a guy in the second tier of soccer, and he was one of the greatest players in English soccer.
I wonder if it's just because they're crazy natural talent, or if it's because the greats are so obsessive with their work ethic that they don't know how to communicate to somebody who's
some
not.
Yeah. It's like Ted Williams is the same way. Ted Williams was a hitting coach, manager, all this stuff. Mm-hmm. He just couldn't do it. Why don't you just do this?
Just hit the ball. That's what I do.
Yeah. Super
By
easy.
By the way, how British was that, the end of that first sentence? Wishes to leave his role as manager with immediate effect. With immediate effect.
He's got it, so Wayne Rooney out. And five-star recruit in college basketball, or high school basketball, Matas Buzelis, who's the number 11 player in the country. He plays out here at Sunshine Christian Academy in Kansas. He's not from Kansas, but he plays there because that's one of the places where people just go play. He has now committed to the G League Ignite for 23-24. So that's another way to go about doing this thing.
Heard that team name a couple times last night.
You could go be a Jayhawk for 3 or 4 years and win, or you could go be in the G League Ignite, which I'm not so sure the G League Ignite is the place to be if you can go make some NIL money at some of these big schools. I don't know, man. That's just me, though. That's just me. All right, we got to get out of the way here, and we can come back and talk to David Leskey, make sure we have plenty of time to get that done. That's coming up next right here on the program. Welcome back into the program. We're wrapping up this fourth hour of the program here. Driving home on a Friday. People still go to work, right, Curtis?
I think so. Those who haven't checked out early to go to the Lenexa Barbecue, probably. Yeah. They're in their cars lining up.
Maybe they're going to the Royals game. Or
could be going to the Royals game.
Maybe not. It is a big weekend out there. Big Slick is going on, and so it'll be the celebrity softball game and all those things. But there's nothing bigger and slicker than David Leskey's writings at Inside the Crown. David, how you doing today?
I'm doing great. How are you?
We're doing awesome, man.
I thought you were going to say nothing bigger and slicker than David Leskey. I'm like,
well,
I
didn't want to get that way
because
it was weird. His writings and columns that you could read.
It's not that hot, so I'm not slick today. But, you know.
We've been slick this week. Oh, my goodness. It's been warm.
Especially the bigger ones.
Yeah, it's been that way. It's been that way. So let's kick off the conversation. We've had a day off, right? So it was, by Royal standards, I mean, what a wonderful road trip. I mean, they were over 500 on the road trip. That's pretty good, right?
Yeah, I mean, they competed with the Giants and won a game. The Giants are a good team. And then they took care of business. I mean, you want to win 2 out of 3 on the road against bad teams. They did it. Good job. I mean, this is what competent baseball looks like. I would understand if people in Kansas City didn't know that. It makes perfect sense that they would have no idea what it looks like. This is it. A competent baseball team winning the games they're supposed to win.
Now, the sad part is it happened at midnight. So,
well, one of them was almost one.
Yeah, you may not get to see what's going on. That is a little disappointing because this team is trying to build some momentum through any way possible. Just this week, they finally have the Bally's app if you want to give – $20 a month to Bally's, where everyone can watch these games if you just got an internet connection or whatever. And, you know, that's probably not going to be a hot seller because of the way things have gone. It'd be nice if they could do something really nice in front of the home fans, and that just hasn't been the case. But this looks like a weekend to maybe do it. Zach Greinke's back out there. The A's are not good, right? As bad as everyone thinks the Royals are, the A's are not a good baseball team. Perhaps some people will be out there for the celebrity stuff and enjoy some actual winning baseball at home. They need that right now because, I mean, they have slipped down the slope, man. They have lost momentum in this town, and it's NBA draft or Chiefs or Sporting's in the U.S. Open Cup. There are many things that people are excited about, and it ain't the Royals right now.
Yeah, it's not, sadly. But, yeah, I mean, they've got a good chance because it's A's for 3, and then the Rangers come in town. The Rangers are better. Still not good. They're a mediocre team, and which is better than the Royals. But bad team can beat a mediocre team. You don't feel like that's not the Astros coming to town. I guess the Royals did win a game from them. So they got that, and then they go to Detroit, and Detroit is on the skids big time. I don't know. I wouldn't even know where to start with what's happened with them because I thought they were a year ahead of the Royals on their rebuild and. They're just right there with the Royals. So this is an opportunity to build on the 6 games against Oakland and Anaheim, and then 9 games here. That's a 15-game stretch. But if you like stabilize a little bit, look, they're not going to win. they're not going to compete for that last wild card spot or anything. But if they want to stabilize the record and kind of get off the 100-loss pace, I think mathematically, if they go 5-1 on this homestand, which is tough, but I think that takes them off the 100-loss pace. This is an opportunity to build some ground because they've got, what, a month before the Chiefs report to training camp?
Mm-hmm.
If they can be at least interesting, I mean, no, yes, people are going to shift their attention 100% because they're not going to be good. But if they can get to be somewhat interesting, they won't lose everybody on July, whatever it is, 22nd, 26th, whatever day they report.
David Leskey, Inside the Crown and Royals Review, is with us here on the program. We're, you know, almost the end of June now, and we've talked over the last few years many times about the young pitching, and this is the Royals' stated goal, draft college pitchers, and that's how the quickest, best way to build a pitching staff was going to be. And there have been some really dark times with some of these guys. But I don't know if they've turned the corner, but it looks like some maybe bright days ahead. Where is your feeling now, just generally speaking, not specifically about Singer, Lynch, or Bubich up here and how they're performing, but generally speaking, do you feel better today than you felt on May 1st about where the Royals' young pitchers are?
Yeah, I think so. You know, like you said, there have been some hiccups, but the thing that's gotten me excited is, I mean, they've actually been striking hitters out. I mean, that's the number one thing. I mean, they were allowing so much contact that no matter how good you think you are at limiting hard contact, it doesn't matter because contact becomes hits sometimes, no matter what. And getting strikeouts, they're not hit. You know, it's very basic. You don't hit the ball, you don't get a hit. Hit the ball, you might get a hit. Well, they're stopping guys from hitting the ball, which is a good thing. I think one of the things that I forget about, I'm sure you guys do too, every so often, they had a weird development path because there were no minor league games in 2020. And so, you know, you look at their big league innings, and Daniel Lynch is at like 140-something, or right around there. I don't know the exact number. But Ray Singer's at 200, I think. Bubich might be around 200. I think Singer's a little over 200. But either way, it's their third season for guys like Singer and Bubich, and I guess Carlos Hernandez, too, if you want to consider him. But they've only got like a season, a little more than a season and a quarter's worth of innings at the most. And so I don't want to give the Royals too much credit here that, hey, maybe they're right. They are young and inexperienced because there are guys who also have the same limitations who are performing on other teams in the league. But I think it's fair before we scream about the young pitchers in particular, maybe not the people coaching them, but the young pitchers in particular, to maybe give them this season because this is kind of the first full real year. Last year they're on innings because of 2020. This year the ropes are loose a little bit. It's much more, hey, go get them. And I think we can really evaluate at the end of the year. Nobody wants to hear that because it's been 4 years since that draft. But we haven't had a real season with them yet. And so this is it. And it looks good over the last few weeks, or better, I guess. Maybe not good. But now we wait. Now we wait to see how that keeps going because as Royals fans, we're always taught, let's wait to see what happens when things go bad, because things are going to go bad. And maybe they won't. Maybe they won't this time.
Well, one of the trends that has not reversed is the Royals' lack of pitch efficiency from their starting pitchers. I would love for just once them not to hit the 90 pitch mark in the fifth inning, but they continue to do that. And that's, I think, what makes Daniel Lynch's last start so frustrating from my perspective, is that in his previous start, he said he didn't have his entire arsenal, and so he knew he couldn't go deep into counts, and so he decided to just be aggressive and go at guys. The result, 2 walks and 10 strikeouts. I thought, well, that's maybe a lesson for the future. Maybe next time out, keep doing that. But what did we see in the last game? Nibble, 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 nibble. He walked 5. He went right back to the guy he'd been before.
Well, it's not just him. I mean, Chris Bubich just talked about that before.
Yeah.
It is a fact that he performs better when he throws his fastball harder. He said it. we can look it up. I mean, every number out there shows it. And he'll do it for like three or four starts. And he's done it the last, it might just be two. I can't remember if it's the last three or not. But he's thrown harder, thrown more fastballs, 93 plus, all that. And he's performed. And then there's going to be a start. I don't know when it'll be, but when he's going to average 89.2 miles per hour and give up 7 runs in 4 1/3 innings. You know, you know what to do. And he's a smart guy. And you're right. Lynch said that before. Now, I think that there's probably a bit of an asterisk on Lynch's start because he got just absolutely hosed by the umpire in the first inning. And I looked it up. If the zone was called correctly, his 30-pitch first would have been a 13-pitch first inning.
Yep.
That's a big difference. But to your point, it was a pitch on the edge. It's a great pitch. I'm not saying I would tell him to keep throwing that. But when you're not going after hitters, this is not excusing the umpire, but sometimes you're not going to get that call. And when you don't get that call, then you end up in a bad situation. And I thought he got hosed by the first base umpire too. I thought on his 23rd pitch, I thought he got the third out on a check swing and they said he didn't go around. And it was just a mess for him in that first inning, his doing, umpires doing everything. So a little bit of a caveat there, but it's not like in his previous starts, he was averaging 12 and a half pitches per inning. And that was the anomaly. So you can blame him for one, but not all. It makes me wonder if they trust their stuff. And it's so interesting to ask that question because I think it's obvious that they have good stuff. I know that Enoceris has the stuff plus and everything, and the Royals don't rate very well there. And I'm not saying that those numbers are wrong. I think that they're probably more right than the eye test. But at the same time, I don't know how you can watch Daniel Lynch throw his slider and think, nah, he doesn't have very good stuff. Or watch Brady Singer's slider and say, no, that's not good. Or Bubich's changeup. I mean, when that pitch is good, it is really, really good. I don't know how you can watch these guys and not think they have good stuff. But they don't seem to trust it, and they don't seem to want to go after hitters. And if you look at what Jonathan Heasley's done over his last, five starts now, four starts, he's going after hitters in a different way, and he's been better. And you know when he got hurt was when he walked two guys before Ohtani. So, I think that I didn't expect to say this, but I think Jonathan Heasley might be a lesson.
Well, you took me right to where I was going anyway, and that is one of the things I think bothers Royals fans the most is that it's hard to tell from game to game. Sometimes it's hard to tell from inning to inning what the Royals' top priority is at the moment. Is it to win games or is it to develop players? And I realize there's some mix of that. But to me, an interesting test case or case study was Jonathan Heasley the other night. First two times through the lineup, Angels 2-for-18. Mike Matheny sends him out there for the sixth, albeit with a 6-1 lead, to face the top of the order. And after the game, Matheny said, "Well, you know, he kind of lost himself in the sixth inning there, and that's not a part of the lineup and not a team that you want to be in that situation with." Yes. So why was he out there? Why did he not have someone ready to go after he walked Taylor Ward or after he walked Mike Trout? Why was he still in the game pitching to the defending American League MVP with two men on?
Yeah, I've gone back and forth on that quite a bit, actually, because the situation, they're up by 5. Heasley has 71 pitches and was throwing strikes. And so on one hand, all right, you got a tired bullpen through some of your own doing. Why not see if you can get, you know, even if he gives up 2 runs, you're still down, you're still up 3 with 3 innings to go. Cut 3 outs out of the bullpen needs to get all that. So I get that. But at the same time, you're right. It's the third time through the order. The Angels have at most 4 competent hitters. I mean, they scored 11 runs and I don't remember what the exact ending was, but at one point the top 4 were 6-for-15 with 8 RBIs and the bottom 5 were 3-for-23. So you get past that top of the lineup and you're fine. But if you're starting the sixth inning on the third time through with that part of the lineup, why not at least have somebody ready? Like I said, I also see the argument not to kind of keep the bullpen a little bit rested. But in the end, they didn't have a choice anyway. And by the time they had somebody ready to go, it was 6-4. So I see both sides, but you're right in, are you developing Jonathan Heasley or are you trying to win? And then it goes into the sub question of, if you're developing Jonathan Heasley, what's more important? The confidence of getting through five with one run allowed or getting into that sixth, seventh inning again against a good top half of the lineup at least. And so I honestly don't know the answer to that. It's an interesting question. But like I said, I don't know what's right and wrong there because I can see both sides.
David Lesky is talking Royals with us here on the program in the 5 o'clock hour. And that has probably been the most frustrating, difficult part for Royals fans over the past 6-7 years is they always claim they're trying to win. Mm-hmm. Still have lost 100 games twice. And maybe this year, maybe not. I don't know. But they're trying to develop at the same time. It seems like it's impossible to do to many people. But I've never been in a town where they actually have tanked. And I don't know what that's like. I don't know what the answers they give you. Do you talk to the general manager or the president? They say, hey, listen, we're tanking. We're not going to win these games, and we're going to do this. I don't know the right way to go about doing it or how to answer the questions or how to nitpick what we do. But when we care about the team and the fans care about the team, the people who like do your job, I mean, you watch every pitch. You want to know exactly what's going on. It's kind of hard to justify these things. Is there a right or wrong way to go about making these moves, or would we probably just, because we're critical people by nature, criticize anything they do?
Well, I mean, I think inherently we criticize results. And I want to see a good process, because if you tell me, okay, we want to keep Jonathan Heasley, we want to keep him confident, so we pulled him, and then they give up, the bullpen gives up three runs, I'm fine with that. You tell me we're trying to build Jonathan Heasley to be able to go through a lineup three times because he's going to need to in a pennant chase, and he gives up three runs, I'm fine with that. But if you tell me you're trying to win and you're not prepared for any situation, I'm not fine with that, no matter what happens. And, you know, to me, it's about the process. And look, they talk about, or I guess they haven't recently, but in the past, it's all been all about trusting the process, right? What is it? What are they doing? Do they even know? that's where my question is. Do they even know what the process is, or are they just guessing along the way? And I'm afraid to know the answer to that, honestly. That's where my criticism is going to come in, is if you don't know what you're doing, then how can you do anything right?
Yeah, it's tough. It's trying to balance the thing. They got the taste of winning, and they got the taste of competing, and they thought, oh, we could do this, and they don't want to just give it up. And, you know, I don't know. I don't know what they're going to do with the trade deadline, because back in 14, they didn't do anything. And in 15, they made big moves. And now this year, it doesn't seem like they seem super concentrated into doing anything, because Dayton Moore told us the other day they don't want to just do things for financial reasons and dumping salary. It's tough to do all these things. I've never said this is an easy thing. And then you pile things like today, Salvador Perez is now going to have surgery on his ulnar collateral ligament on his left thumb. He's on the 10-day injured list, and is expected to return later this year. This is another thing. He's had this thing happen twice. This is someone who they have committed a lot of money to. So even when they do the thing where if you're trying to recycle and get talent, they can't seem to quit on Alex Gordon or Salvador Perez. They sign long-term deals with him. And now, Alex Gordon was not good for the first couple of, well, maybe the whole 4 years of his deal, but it was especially not good for the big money when they needed him to be good. And now Salvi's making real money, and he's on the books, and he's been hurt the thumb twice now. He's been on the deal. His eyes aren't working right. I mean, I don't know. I mean, these are things that are kind of happening. People didn't really pay attention to it when Salvi got hurt on the road, because everything else, we're watching Shohei, right. All this stuff. And now,
well, he scored 12 that day too.
Right. So now Salvi's surgery now. I mean, I don't know. He expected to return. Doesn't sound like he's going to be back any next week, right?
Right.
This is not good.
Yeah, and I mean, look, we know what thumb injuries can do. We saw Dozier last year. We saw when Salvi came back. Way too early, by the way. I still don't understand that. Why do you bring him back immediately without a bat in Omaha?
Well, he's one of these guys who just wants to play baseball too. I mean,
and that's great.
But you gotta tell him no, right?
You gotta do what's best for him and the team. And I don't think either of those two things, he looks okay, but pretty clearly it got worse. I mean, and now, look, I've never questioned the Royals trainers. They have an excellent training staff, and they have, at least in the past. They've won awards for it. But, I mean, they said this can't get worse, and now he's having surgery. Doesn't that mean it got worse?
Sounds like it.
Maybe surgery was always the next step, and it was going to be after the season if he could get through, but he just hurting it again, pushed it earlier. I don't know. Maybe it didn't get worse, but sure seems like it. I don't know what they're doing. It's a lot to take in with this organization, and you're right too. I don't know where they're headed at the trade deadline. And I mean, I guess I appreciate we're going to dump anybody for salary reasons, but maybe would you dump somebody because there's a better option in the minors for them? I mean, that seems to be a reasonable thought, but I don't know. I mean, I find myself sighing a lot more because I don't know the answer, and I don't understand the thought process. And it's interesting because I feel like in past seasons, and I've said this before, but I feel like in past seasons, when the Royals did something, I could say, I don't agree with it, but I get it. And there are so many things in the last year or so that I can't say I get it. I also don't agree with it, but I also don't get it. And I don't know. I hope it's leading to something that we don't expect, because it sure feels like they're off track right now.
And that's the problem you get when you try to develop young players while staying competitive. I mean, the Royals essentially want to rebuild their house while they're still living in it. And when you have that approach for a team like this, the season you get is always going to be the season they're having right now, where there's a hint here and there of some possible success. But we also got some hint over here of some possible development, and they seem to want to straddle that line without really committing to either one. And the season's almost halfway over, and they really have yet to implement any workable plan for the final 3 months of the year.
No, you're right. And look, if they want to do both, I think there are times to do that. 2018 was a year, it was an obvious rebuild year, yes, for sure. But if they said, hey, we want to go out, we're going to spend some money on some veterans because we have 3 years before these prospects make it up. Whatever it is, whatever number you want to put on, it doesn't matter. So we're going to go out and we're going to give a bunch of guys 2 and 3 year deals. And we're going to spend, I don't know how much money, a lot of money to put a competitive team on the field while we're waiting. Okay, but that's different than what they did. And that's different than what they're doing now. And now they're at a point where they've got the young guys. I think if they had done that in 18 to 20-ish, you wouldn't feel so bad about, oh, they're struggling right now, but they've got everybody up. They've got Prado and Pasquantino and Witt and Melendez and Olivares back now and Isabel roaming the outfield, all that. I don't think you'd feel as bad about it, but they've stayed in the middle, but they've also stayed in the middle poorly, because instead of going out and getting someone who can actually help in 2018, they signed Lucas Duda.
Mm-hmm.
And instead of, what year was Billy Hamilton? Was he 18 also? Whatever year. Instead of going
in there,
out, whatever,
yes, yeah.
Whatever year it was, it doesn't matter. They went out, instead of getting a center fielder, they got Billy Hamilton. So you're either doing it or you're not, and they're not, but they're also doing it under the auspices that they are. And it's hard to explain because it doesn't make sense.
Yeah.
And I don't know. It's frustrating.
It's frustrating for a lot of people. There's no doubt about it. David Leske is our guest. It's time for the Final Four, brought to you by the University of Kansas Health System. These are all written by our intern, Ethan, okay, from BYU. So do not complain to me about these questions if you've already had them before. Here we go. You ready, David?
I'm ready.
Wasn't the first question. Are you ready? So here's the first question. What's the Royals' final record going to be? You said they're almost a good series away from being under 100 on the loss thing, but what do you think the final record's going to be?
I still don't think they lose 100 because I think they're going to get better when the young guys start to come up, which is a sad state. So I'm going to say 60. I want to say 67. I'm going to say 67 and 95 because I'm feeling real optimistic today.
There you go. You're very optimistic. Now let's see how optimistic you are on this. How many years until the Royals make the playoffs again?
Let's see. They're not expanding the playoffs again until at least 2026. So, I think The American League Central really helps them quite a bit. I'm going to say 2025, but they will be close in 2024.
Okay, that's not bad. That is optimistic. Okay, so which Royals pitcher is going to have the most wins at the end of the year?
Who leads now? Is it still Colin Snyder?
Yeah.
That's sad.
It can't be him, right?
No, I'm assuming he's not going to be back for a little bit. I think it's Brady Singer. If he just keeps putting up those three runs in five or six innings, and the Royals' offense has been better, so I think it's going to be Brady Singer.
All right, the Stanley Cup playoffs continue tonight, and the NBA draft was last night. Which franchise would you rather have, an NBA or an NHL franchise in Kansas City?
I mean, I would be happy with either. I'm happier with both. I think I'm more basketball than hockey. So personally, I'd say NBA, but like I like hockey too. So I'm good. I'm good with whatever.
Well, and neither are ever going to come, so you're fine either way.
Yeah,
right?
It's going to be lacrosse first or something. So.
Exactly. Well, here's the deal, David. Thanks for your time. You were no frustrations yesterday because the Royals didn't get to play because they were off. And now you've got frustrations coming for days in a row. So it's going to be a great weekend for you.
Life is good.
All right, that's David Leske from Inside the Crown. Read his stuff there. You're on the program right here on Sports Radio 810 WHB.
But first, the Joe's Kansas City Barbecue burnt end of the hour answer. Duke had four players taken to the first round for the second time ever last night, other time being 1999. Name the four players taken in the first round that year.
I'm pretty sure William Avery was.
He was the fourth one taken at number 14.
Was Trajan Langdon taken or not?
Number 11.
Elton Brand wasn't on that team. Carlos Boozer, no. Elton Brand was on that team.
Number one.
Okay. And then there was another dude. Give me a white kid. Dunleavy?
Nope.
Somebody?
Corey Maggette.
Yeah, he was.
Four of the top 14.
Not bad. I was at that Final Four. Quinn Snyder's last Final Four as an assistant for Duke
in
before
St.
he
Pete?
Got hired. Yes. I was
at
there.
At the Dome?
Yeah, it was really beautiful. What an amazing site for basketball games.
Hell of a game, too.
Not exactly an amazing site for basketball games.
Okay, that was a dog.
It is Big Slick time in Kansas City. There was a press conference today with all of our favorites, right? Your Rob Riggles, your Eric Stonestreets, your David Koechners and Paul Rudds. And we're going to play a soundbite for you. This is a little bit about how proud they are of Kansas City for getting the World Cup, but also just about how proud they are of everything we have in Kansas City.
I was excited as everybody else.
Yeah, I think it's great. I mean, I think Kansas City's put on, you know, a clock to do even more stuff before the World Cup makes its appearance here. So I think it's great motivation for the city. I think it's going to be, I mean, the infrastructure of soccer, of football that the city is committed to is no doubt a reason why the World Cup chose Kansas City. I think it's an amazing opportunity for the city to push itself until that date hits.
The Kansas City we knew growing up in the 80s and 90s, it's very different from today. And then even in the last decade, like you mentioned, I think I've seen what I see in this city. It is a city on the rise. And it's in every aspect, you know, whether it's our sporting teams, whether it's, you know, Sporting Kansas City or the Royals going to two World Series or the Chiefs going to two Super Bowls. And, you know, I mean, these are amazing things that are happening. And that's just on the sports front. Children's Mercy Hospital is a treasure. I don't know if people realize, you know, I want Kansas Cityans to know, and I want other people to know what a treasure Children's Mercy Hospital is. It's an elite hospital. It is a nationally recognized hospital for the work they do here. And we have it right here in Kansas City. So we have this amazing treasure. And you can just see it. You can see it in the industry. You can see it in the companies that are coming here. It's business friendly. Like there's a vibe. I don't know how else to describe it. I guess I'm from California, so now I live in California, so vibe is a big word we use out there. But there's a vibe here, and it's a good one.
It is a good one. A lot of good things happening in Kansas City.
Yep.
World Cup is going to be very cool, and Children's Mercy is an amazing place. I'm a little bit biased because my daughter works for Children's Mercy Research Institute, and the amount of money these guys have come back and raised for their hometown is awesome. It's really cool. That's going to do it for us, Curtis. Enjoy your weekend. I'm off to Omaha, brother.
Go
I'm
Sooners.
Going tomorrow.
Boomer.
Let's get a Sooner win. Bonnie Jill Laughlin is up next. I'm actually not leaving yet because we've got that to do.
Oh, yeah.
And then we've got Game 5 of the Stanley Cup playoffs tonight. Do or die for the Lightning. It's all right here on Sports Radio 810.